When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Food is a beautiful thing. And if I always made food just as much as their training about their work, I would take away the enjoyment of what food is. And so a big part of what food is recovery. And it's not just physical recovery, it's mental creative recovery. That moment going back to the dinner table that I spoke about earlier is super important to have that moment, whether it be on your own, with your family, your friends, your team, whatever it is, to be away from the constant pressure of expectation on themselves, from their teammates, from their sponsors, to be away from that. And that's what food can do.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast with me, Dr. Rupi, where we discuss the most important topics and concepts in the medicinal qualities of food and lifestyle. These are some of the things that I've written about in my latest book, Eat to Beat Illness, which has now been released in the USA. You can pick it up in all good bookstores, including Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, and Amazon Online. Now, as part of my trip to launch it in the US, I caught up with Aussie-raised but New York-residing chef Dan Churchill. He studied nutrition at university, made his break in Australia with best-selling cookbooks like Dude Food, and then made appearances on American Morning TV. He's now the official chef for Under Armour clothing brand and on the Center.com app as well. He opened Charlie Street in New York City's Nolita District, a spread bar delivering colorful bowls, tasty toast options, with, of course, epic third wave coffee. I've personally been and it is amazing. It's also home to Dan's studio kitchen, where he posts YouTube recipes and interviews from his Epic Table podcast, which I'm also now featured on too. I really respect Dan's pragmatic approach to nutrition and food. You can tell that his mission is to make people fall in love with food again, even his professional athlete clients that could be forgiven for seeing food as yet another tool to improve performance. Remember, you can check out the show notes for everything on thedoctorskitchen.com. Sign up to the weekly newsletter where we deliver recipes straight to your inbox. But for now, on with the podcast. Dan, thank you so much for cooking me lunch, man.
Oh, thanks. Place is all mine.
Do you want to tell us what that was?
Mate, we did a...
It doesn't look as nice as it did before, but like, yeah. I mean, it tastes incredible.
Mate, that was a request from your end. So you asked for vegetarian pad thai. Yeah. And so instead of using brown rice noodles,
yeah,
we did some spaghetti noodles and made like a sweet little pad thai.
Mm.
How good?
Man, it's delicious. So good. And we're sitting here in your Charlie Street cafe at the moment. And it's the first time I've met you, but I feel like I've known you through the medium of social media for years now. I've been following your prolific rise to fame and how everything started for you. I wanted to go back to basics. So I've already done a little introduction to you already, but I'd love to hear your story from doing your nutrition degree, where you grew up in Australia, and how you developed and created your own path, man.
Mate, yeah, it's funny. We spoke about it earlier. We're talking about it's moments you actually take a step back and reflect on. And yeah, I've been cooking since I was 12. I just turned 30, so I've been cooking since I was 12 for my family.
You look like 22, bro.
Oh yeah, especially if I shave this, I look like I'm a baby. Like, it is terrible. Thanks for finally having a bit of beard growth. Mm. It's still called beard. It's rarely even a beard. It's like bum fluff. But mate, yeah. So I've been cooking since that age, and it was for my family. So it was never professional. Mm. Always just home style cooking, and that honestly came about because parents and I and my two brothers sat around on a Sunday night watching Jamie Oliver. And it wasn't necessarily the cooking side. At the time, I didn't realize this, but Dad realized just the creativity it brought and the conversation it brought, the brothers and mum and himself, and through that it was like a bond. And so he created a calendar for us to take turns in cooking for. And it was like our thing every week. We watched Jamie, and then we also take turns throughout the week to cook for each other. And so that was a really cool development for me, because as you grow up, as we all know, you can some points drift apart, but that dinner table moment is something that we all can relate to. And I'm so privileged to have a family that was so, in common with that dinner table. That's why I really cherish what food does. And I think, aside from the flavor and the well-being it does, that's truly why I got into it. Because I'd been cooking since that time, but when I finished high school, I love sport. Like, I'm a sport fanatic. I love exercising and being active and running amok. Northern Beaches in Sydney, that'll do
you
too.
You did a marathon as well, right?
Yeah, I did the marathon last year.
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, running again this year, so training's ramping up for that as well. But like, that's the thing. Like, I love testing my body. I love testing myself physically.
Yeah.
And so I went and did an undergraduate. I did a sport and exercise management degree. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I love sport, so I did that. I learned a lot about business, the human body. And when that degree finished, I was PTing at the time and playing rugby and building my personal training business. But I was like, I really want to specialize in specifics of performance and stuff like that. So that's when I did a master's degree in exercise science, nutrition, and strength conditioning. And it was kind of a funny moment, because I was with that able to work with athletes, and I found myself talking to these individuals who I'd looked up to for a very long time, but they wouldn't know anything about nutrition. Not that they had to, but even worse, they didn't know much about cooking. So the nutritionist would be speaking to them about what they should be having. And just like you have that moment with the oatmeal, that light bulb moment, I was blown away when these athletes to be honest, if I was an athlete, I was like, well, I would do everything in line, but not everyone is, and that's totally fine. But they didn't know how to apply what the nutritionist was saying about how much fat to have, how much protein to have, and whatever. So I started creating these recipes for these athletes. Knowing with the basic cooking I knew, but knew completely what the nutritionist was saying. And that was quite successful. Tie that in with the fact that a lot of my mates on weekends were trying to get some brownie points from their lady friends. So I send them some recipes as well. And I ended up making, a cookbook. And so that's how Dude Food came about.
Yeah.
Not a chef at that stage, still building a solid PT business and health coaching business, and applying nutrition much more so than the food side. But I realized that there could be, especially with that Dude Food book. I remember when I was like 4 years old, I dressed up as a chef for a book, a dress up book.
No way.
Yeah, I did. But and then
that's like, awesome. And so, I want to see this picture, man.
Oh, I'll get to you. It's unbelievable. Mum's got it. And then I remember when, fast forward to when I was mid-teens, I'm like, I want to be a chef watching Jamie. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't want to be the 90-hour chef in the week, doing dark windows and all this kind of, like, I didn't want to be that. Yeah. And it's not because I wasn't keen to do that. I just didn't feel like, I'm a very, charismatic person, and being in a dungeon for so long is what these guys do and these ladies do. And it's credit to them, but then I realized I could be a new type of foodie or cook. And so after Dude Food was pretty successful and got me some media time, I put my head down and kind of each nighttime I'd go to a different restaurant just work my up the line. So it'd be like Thai, Italian, Argentinian, Brazilian. And I just, every single night would be something different.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah.
So you kind of taught yourself these different culinary techniques by just going and restaurant hopping.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I'd jump in and be like, sometimes you get turned down, but like, I'd just be like, yeah, chef, I'll clean dishes, pots and pans, whatever it is. And I did that maybe for a week, and then they like put you up into prep, and then you go from prep into this, and like you maybe jump on the line, you're from line to, maybe sous and then head, and then eventually you're actually running it. So it's just pretty, like, for me, it was, that took me about 2 years to do, but I loved it. I loved each night I went somewhere different. That was, of course, 6 months actually, and then the rest of it was, I stuck to one for about 2 years. But yeah, it was an unbelievable learning experience.
So when did you transition from, you know, running your PT business, learning about food, doing a few meals for some athletes, into what you're doing today?
Yeah, it's a good question. So Dude Food came out when I was about 20, 21. And
20?
Then, yeah, it's pretty young. Yeah, to think back.
You're a veteran in this, dude. That's amazing.
And then, yeah, so the Healthy Cook. I think it was probably that moment where the Healthy Cook came
this,
out.
This delicious
one. Yeah, with the button up right up to the top of the neck. Mate, yeah. So I think it was probably around the time that came out that I really went hard. And I, to be honest, I was still doing a lot of sessions during the day at PT, but then I...
you can tell, mate.
Mate, I'm just trying to look as good as you in the front. Give that beautiful smile, you handsome man. So it was kind of like around that time I was like, all right, we're gonna have a crack at this and just go ham and like be the brand.
Yeah, epic. And so when did you end up going to New York and starting all this stuff here?
Yeah, so I've lived here for 4 years. So I got my visa 4 years ago. But before that, I was coming back and forth for about a year and a half. I came here, first got a book deal, and then book deals, as you know, take a bit of time to get through the actual book and then do the tour and the launch. So it took about a year and a half, and then I got the visa. So technically I've been coming here for about 5.5, almost 6 years.
Okay.
And that was, like, what, it was 24? Yeah, but 23, 24 at the time. Or 20, 24.
Yeah. 24. Yeah. Oh, that's epic, man.
Yeah,
and so you... you have a distinct edge in terms of your nutrition masters and how you applied that to performance outcomes, right? You're a personal chef for some really well-known Winter Olympians.
So like I'm the chef at Under Armour, and that entails me the very first person.
Said very casually there.
You're the
official chef for Under Armour.
So how it works is Lindsay Vonn is a skier, and she's the most winningest downhill female skier of all time. And she went to the Olympics and wanted to have someone that could just, she could count on, who can work with her. And Under Armour are also looking for someone to help them with their food program to an extent. And when the individuals were looking after, or Under Armour were looking online, they kept typing in healthy chef. And thank God for SEO and consistency with your branding and everything everyone talks about, because it actually paid off. And that's led me to, you know, working with a number of different athletes now, which is really exciting. So I'm able to actually specifically talk about the breakdown of, you know, I'll maybe talk with specifically their nutritionist, but then I can apply what they're talking about for them, for themselves.
So you work alongside some nutritionists as well, and you kind of translate what's relevant to them.
Sure.
So talk me through the process, right? So you're working with an athlete, they're in a particular sport.
Yeah.
How do you break down with the nutritionist? How do you break down what they're going to eat, when they're going to eat, all the different things, and then tailor that to what they actually want to eat as well, right? Because that's just as important.
Oh, it's the most important thing. Flavor is the most important thing. If it's not tasty, it's not healthy, and it's not for you. That's actually true, to the sense that when we eat, serotonin enlightens in the brain. So when that happens, your body is primed to absorb the nutrients because they release the serotonin. So if you actually don't enjoy something, your body's actually automatically telling you it doesn't want it. And so as a result, like it's funny, because you like think about it, like, well, think, well, the kids got things growing up and didn't like as a kid. It's like, well, maybe you just weren't ready for it yet. But when you are now, you taste the things, and it's like your body's automatic first barrier is flavor.
Yeah.
So I always make sure that athletes do know that. I don't want them to ever eat something they don't like. But their eating patterns are very similar to the typical training patterns in periodization. So we may look at the course of a year and go, you know, they may have a quiet period here where there'll be pre-season, and this will be super pre-season, where it would be like super start to like be dialed in. In season, they may be traveling. So like one of the athletes that we work with is 1 week they'll be, you know, playing at home. They've only got 2 games away. And so we're constantly looking at how that is measured up. And this all comes back to a philosophy that we talked about, control the controllable. So what can I do that I know will make sure that he or she gets what they need to, and what can they do that I know they can look after day to day? Is it always bringing, making sure they have their subs on them, that I, you know, that's stuff like that, their powders that they would have during the day, versus what can I set up at other locations to make sure they're still getting what they need or even what they can cook, because I still want them to cook to an extent.
Yeah.
And that is just the plan. Like anything, you have a plan, you have an action, and you apply it. And so that's what we do. We look at the course of the plan, whether it be an Olympiad, an annual season, and we just apply what we want them to do. And each athlete's different, not just each individual in their sport. Mm-hmm. Each athlete is different. Like we talk about microbiome in the gut. Yeah, it's so important to make sure that we recognize that.
Absolutely. And so do you notice patterns across different sports about, you know, what kind of nutritional quantities they need and macronutrient composition? Or is it very distinct from sport to sport? Because, I mean, you deal with skiers and hockey players and a whole bunch of different athletes, right? Particularly representing Under Armour.
Yeah. Like I definitely look at a sport modality and have an understanding of their physical prowess and the exertion they do on those in those particular sports. And then on top of that, I look at the athlete themselves and how much they're exerting in a game. Sometimes I'm able to get numbers on certain things that they do, so how much they work and with all the science we now have, which is great. But ultimately, I like to look at data, I also like to look at this human as a human. And so I think the biggest way I say, I don't look at them as an athlete. I look at them as a person, and then I just apply the best option for that person. And the reason why I do that is I dehumanize them, and I take away if I did apply them just as an athlete and always look at them as an athlete, food is a beautiful thing. And if I always made food just as much as their training about their work, I would take away the enjoyment of what food is. And so a big part of what food is recovery. And it's not just physical recovery, it's mental creative recovery. That moment going back to the dinner table, as I spoke about earlier, is super important to have that moment, whether it be on your own, with your family, with your friends, your team, whatever it is, to be away from the constant pressure of expectation on themselves, from their teammates, from their sponsors, to be away from that. And that's what food can do.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm very cautious of, like, I'll speak to them. I'm like, hey, what do you think? How's this? Yeah, it's great. Awesome. I prefer, unless we sit down and they go, we have a specific chat on stuff, I try to make sure it's like an enjoyable, you know, meals if they were having one with their family.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people would expect, particularly sports stars like footballers or, you know, people on the road quite a bit, everything is very regimented. And I think a lot of people who are outside of the sports industry and just want to look after themselves are relying on like pre-cooked, pre-measured, calorie counted, everything like in a box, like just almost like machine made for them as the way to achieve their physical goals. But what I love about your approach, and it comes out, man, in your social media and all the content you do in your podcast and everything, is that you're bringing that humanistic element to it. And that's just as important, like you said, to the athletes, right? For their performance as well as their well-being.
Absolutely. Like they, just like as you're building your brand, you don't want to be recognized, as a star. You want to be recognized as who you are and what you stand for, potentially, obviously, as well. But you just want to be recognized as a rupee, right? And they're the same. So if we continue to put them in that star frame, then it's every facet that we do, we will definitely take away an aspect of their humanity. And that's where food is so crucial. It's one thing throughout the day that they can definitely use as a tool to set aside a break from.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that there are certain types of foods that are like performance foods that you want to try and introduce into your athletes' diets without question, or, you know, is all food?
I mean, there's definitely the obvious ones, like plants, like without a doubt, as much plants and fermented food as possible. And depending on the athlete, I've got a couple of athletes who actually are plant-based, and so we look at alternative ways that they will obviously get the proteins and the B12 that they require. But I look at food as food and not as fuel. And like you and I always talk about with whatever we do, whatever across content, plants are full of so much goodness for you. So, you know, constantly using sweet potato for what it does. Starchy ingredients like butternut squash are fantastic. Look at that dense color. With the you know, support of the proteins that are, you know, strong, whether it be your lean chicken, your fish, and those kind of things that are super, super beneficial. So I definitely focus on the plants, and then use the protein as it should be, as a as a notion of support, but the plant's the main thing, particularly when they're traveling so much.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, there's a new movie. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
Can't wait to see it.
I can't wait to see it either, man. I'm really, really looking forward to it. But the one thing I'm a little bit fearful of is that because it's a vegan movie, it's going to be of that mindset that everyone should go vegan, and then you'll have these athletic performance feats, right? You'll be able to perform just like these guys. Whereas, you know, having worked with athletes who are plant-based and those who are not plant-based, that it's horses for courses. It depends on that person, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Bioindividuality is a brilliant thing. You know your gut better than anyone else. If I told you to eat, you know, the perfect diet for Rupee, it does not matter what I say, because you will ultimately say, well, my gut didn't agree with this, or I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to think about avoiding these generic meal settings and actually listen to ourselves better. So, you know, we can go plant-based, great, but just listen to what your body says. Does it actually work? If it works for you, fantastic. If you feel fantastic, sustainable energy, awesome. But if you actually question it and go, well, actually, you know, my digestion's a bit off, but, you know, I'm eating plant-based, that's right for me. I'm like, well, that's where we're trying to follow a trend as opposed to actually listening to ourselves, and that's where we get lost.
Yeah, totally, man. And we're sat here in your incredible like cafe / studio / podcasting booth / you know, test kitchen. What I'm really interested in is how you went from social media to books to private chefing to running your own business, because you're the CEO, the buck stops at you. I've heard you chatting to your managers and everything. And how do you manage that, man? How do you look after you?
Yeah, you got to be number one. Yeah. Ultimately, I'm a big believer in that. I would talk about that to a lot of people, and it's same with relationships. And I really mean this. Like, if I'm not number one, I can't give my girlfriend the best of me. And ultimately that means it's going to fall against her. And it's the same with my team, with my mates, my family, most importantly, obviously, as well. It's like, you have to look after yourself. So I look after my health, I look after my recovery, I look after how much time I can provide to people. And that's to say, it's the same thing. Like, it's a not selfish approach, because if you can't be the best of you, then the people who love you for who you are will not recognize you. So I structure my days like 9 o'clock till 6 is generally work hours. Outside of that is you know, me time, which
great.
So usually I catch it, like, you know, I love I go to the gym in the morning first thing, and then come home and see the lady, and then hopefully get a, like, it's definitely the last few months been very busy, but I make sure no matter what that Milena knows that she's number one in my life. So that's always a big one.
Yeah.
But then also make time for your friends. And that's for yourself as well.
Yeah.
So I've just been on a trip with the boys for two weeks, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's epic, man. And have you learned that along the journey? Because you've been in the game now for over 10 years.
Yeah.
And I can imagine at the start when you even had the did you always want to run a cafe and restaurant?
I always did, but it's funny, like, as a chef you have, like, you know, your social media, your digital, your books, your TV, your part of your brand, but also you have a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, if I'm talking about all this food on TV,
yeah,
I'm like, far out, like, I want people to taste it.
Yeah.
And it's a tangible touch point, like, where digital and social are fantastic in being able to relate to anybody, that you still miss that tangible action of meeting people or having them taste your food, and for them to, you see them, like, there's been moments, I think one of the best moments is I just see a family rock in and sit down at a table and taste the food, and you see them all smile, and whether or not it's about the food doesn't matter, it's, you see them sitting down at the table together and you're like, I'm a part of that family's, like, experience. Yeah. In New York City. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah,
like, that really excites me.
That's it.
Because that reminds me of my family when I was sitting at dinner table. You know what I mean? That's really cool. But yeah, like, I there's so many things I want to do in the restaurant space. But as a chef, I think it's only second nature. You want people to kind of relate to you on a tangible level.
I feel the same way about medicine, and a lot of people expect me to have left medicine already by now. And, you know, I do 2 to 3 days clinical a week, and it keeps it very real for me. So me going into this sort of like brand and social media stuff as a doctor, to keep it real and tangible for me, is to see patients. And I can imagine for you, the tangibility comes from what you just said, right? Watching people enjoy your food, taste the food, sit around a table, you know, all those kind of intangibles, but tangible.
Absolutely. It's brilliant, man. Like, just like when you see someone come in and smile when you know, you've, or even not necessarily you, but you see, you're in the practitioner and you see someone's, you know, released or happy and something's been told some fantastic news that in some way you've touched them. It's just like the best feeling.
That's right.
It's good for you, man. Like we talked about it, how you are still involved day to day, 2 to 3 days a week, and that's massive. Like that's good for you. Like it's a, but at the same time, that must be so challenging.
It can be, you know. And like the thing is, I get feedback. I learn every time I'm in clinic or in A&E.
Sure.
And the same thing I can imagine would be true of you, right? You're getting feedback from customers. You're learning a bit about plants and learning more as you go along. Actually, that was going to be one of my questions about how you feel either your own personal diet or the diets of the people that you look after through food, your athletes and private chefing, has changed over the last 10 years. Have you noticed, yes, particularly trends towards plant-based, but have you noticed you learning more things about nutrition and then implementing that into plant?
Absolutely. Like I'm learning every single day. I'm reading books, not just on nutrition, but on sustainability and all those kind of things. So like, you know, 10 years ago when I was training pretty heavily with rugby, like my diet was admittedly like wasn't drilled in as what it is today, and not, I never had fast food, but I was eating a lot of pasta. I was you know, very white starchy thing. I have oats in the morning, which is totally fine, but then my lunchtime would be wraps, which is totally fine again, but then I'm having that and pasta. So it's like, you know, the variety was definitely not there. But at the time, I'm a, like 20 year old guy who's playing rugby who just couldn't put weight on, and so now a 30 year old guy still can't put weight on.
But yeah, most like, people listen to this and are like, to hell with these guys.
But yeah, like, and then obviously throughout the course that you learn more about the well-being, and you actually, when you're, I think when you're younger, you don't really think about, you definitely don't think about, in my opinion, that you don't take a step back because you're so in the moment. But if you take a step back now, you realize, oh, I was actually sick last week and I didn't realize that my diet was pretty average.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't get sick. Yeah. You know, I get, if I get sick, it's like a weird situation. People are like, what the, I don't know how to handle, what do I do with my hands? Like, so yeah, it's definitely changed. And as I've learned more about, you know, the keto diets, plant-based diets, paleo, all these kind of things, I've in some ways wanted to dabble in them. Just to be able to advocate and give some advice as well. So I've definitely done my own fair share of testing on my body and know it works for me. And it all comes down to like, I definitely need carbohydrates in my diet. I know that, my body and whatnot, but I've definitely learned that how much I love plants.
Yeah.
I'm not vegan, but I choose how much protein I have quite wisely as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really important point as well from the sustainability point of view.
Yeah, huge.
But I'm fascinated by the utility of ketogenic diets, which is, just for the listeners, one where the proportion of energy comes largely from fat.
Yeah.
A little bit from protein, a little bit from very, very little carbohydrates. So your energy sources are coming from ketones and you go into nutritional ketosis. But I'm fascinated about the therapeutic benefits of that in certain scenarios. So for those who are looking to improve metabolic control, or for very extreme circumstances with epilepsy and controlling of seizures. But from an endurance athlete point of view, have you come across much stuff to do with the ketogenic diet and the potential utility uses of it?
Yeah, like there's a couple of guys that I've actually, who did the marathon last year on the ketogenic diet.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually really surprised how they like, I was expecting them to be like, you know, pretty much die, admittedly. But they pulled through in pretty solid times too. And I think what was interesting, I was speaking to them about it, and again, it comes back to not really providing a diet that one fits all, but listen to what people say. And they just said, look, I've been doing it for 3 months and I found that I sleep better. Yeah. I am concentrating, my, you know, hormonal balance is feeling track and my digestion's, you know, quite solid. And that's surprising to me, but that's great. And then I found out later, like, I, as much as it's great for my body, I can't sustain the living conditions of the lifestyle of it, which is where I'm like, you know, that's where I'm, you know, advocate of, if you're gonna do those kind of things, do them in short bursts just to shock the microbiome in the gut. But I personally don't see them long-term opportunities. Plus I look at, you know, I'm working as one of the food and ag ambassadors for the UN this year in the climate week. So I look at, how much sustainable that is from a resources perspective as well. So there's a number of different factors, but you know, I have seen athletes be keto, and I have seen them succeed. But I think you're more likely to see people who not, yeah, you're more likely to see the sustaining aspect of ketogenic diet, you know, very short lived.
Yeah, under considerable scrutiny as well. And I think, you know, the utility of these diets can actually be in a, like you said, cyclical form rather than something that is just something you do 100% of the time, yeah. Because the sustainability of that from an environmental perspective, but also from like a human perspective as well, it's just super, super tough.
Yeah, there's a guy named Dr. Will Cole, who's a friend of mine. He's done the Ketotarian diet. And I love it because he's someone who's not saying you, like, he's not to say this is the one trick pony, but he says it up very well. Essentially, if you're going to do this once a year just to shock your body, these are the reasons why, and it's a much more sustainable way to do so. And, you know, that for me is, it's truly accurate. Because if you're thinking about the resources you're limited by, but also then the things you're meant to put more forward for, I just, you know, I don't think it's something that we can travel with consistently. And obviously that's part of it. Like, to be in ketosis, you have to have only carbs, only fats and protein, minimal protein.
So even minimal protein, because it has that glycemic effect.
Exactly. So
it's very, very difficult. And I think we're learning more about like the fasting practices and different diets like that could be used as a way to stress the body into a more resilience effect as well. So I think it's like one of those things. It's got to be one of the it's got to be a dynamic. It can't be just the one way. It can't be like, okay, I'm going to go keto for a whole year. It's going to be like, you know, a mesh of different methods of eating.
Definitely. Yeah. Like you think about fasting for maybe 3 or 4 days, and that would be the same effect I would have with keto. Yeah. And then, you know, then you do that once every maybe 2 months. That's a much better way of administering it as well. Because I feel like if you're doing that too much, you can also go the negative way with cortisol. Absolutely. And cortisol can, you know, cortisol is a detrimental thing in stress, and you can stress so many parts of your bodies that you didn't even realize by just be constantly in this state of flux.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, particularly those listening as well, the ketogenic is not a diet that I think could be dabbled in reasonably for a lot of people. It's a very, very strict way of eating. Absolutely. Leads to a lot of restrictive behaviors. And also, I've read some papers actually about even a short burst of ketogenic diets can be detrimental to your gut to the same extent as a course of antibiotics. Because if you don't give your carbohydrates or your fibers to your gut microbiota, they have nothing to eat. And they can digest themselves, they can digest the lining of your stomach, and can actually lead to a lot of issues. So it's something to, I think, you've got to have a lot of support. And I think that's why athletes who do have a lot of support, who have a nutritionist or a good chef like yourself, you know, can do it safely.
Yeah,
but it's, yeah, definitely one of those things. Mate, tell me a bit more about your podcast. I've just had the pleasure of being on it. It's honestly the Epic Table.
The Epic Table.
I love it. And you know, one of the reasons why I love it is because one of the only podcasts out there where you cook for the guests live.
Yeah.
And I've started doing that recently, and it's so much fun. But like, it's hard to do, man. Like, cook and chat at the same time. You did that effortlessly. Honestly, I was learning loads of tips whilst you were doing it.
Mate, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. But tell me about it, man. You've had some epic guests on it.
Yeah. I've had this guy called Dr. Rupi. He's a good bloke. Mate, this is one of the coolest things. I really love the podcast because, you know, having this studio kitchen down below Charlie Street now enables me to really meet people from all walks of life, whether you're an athlete, you know, celebrity, entrepreneur, someone who's an expert in a respective field, a mover and shaker. Like, I'm loving it. And hearing, I'm learning so much. That's why I'm loving it. So on the Epic Table, we get a guest. I always cook for them a meal that's either nostalgic or something they want or have requested. And throughout that period, we kind of learn, you know, who they are, but also what shapes them. And we also learn something specific about their expertise. So with you, we talked particularly about how you are someone who we all can turn to give us clinical studies and research, but then also relate those clinical studies to through the food and the books that you were a part of. So that's a pure example of what we have. We've got people like, we had Naomi Watts on, Anthony Polsky, Anthony from Queer Eye.
Yeah.
We've had, who else we have? Top of my head. We've had both the Women's Health and Men's Health Editor-in-Chief, which is brilliant. Both Liz and Rich are amazing people there. But then I've had people who, like, you know, who are doing amazing things and have done just exceptional work in providing education to many. So, yeah, it's at the end of the day, I get to cook a feed and we have a good time down
there. Yeah, that's epic, man. And so you've got a new book coming out? Is that
mate,
right?
I do. It's I'm writing it myself. So I'm probably going to self-publishing route. I've asked people to do it, but just I find with everything going on, if I'm going to get a publisher, I need a publisher to be like, okay, we're doing it this time, and I know that's what's going to happen. And right now, I'm not keen on that. I'm kind of just doing it myself for a bit.
Okay.
So we'll see.
That's interesting. Yeah. Man. Yeah. Do you have a title yet?
I don't. I know the chapter breakdown. Is very much simple around scenarios.
Okay.
So things that we would do every day, as opposed to being like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's like around how we would act and apply it to ourselves, whether it be, you know, a simple one could be, you know, cooking for yourself, or like the brunch on the Sunday that you finally get your mates around for, kind of thing. So you make it, it's actually like a wordy kind of scenario. You know, the thing you make before you go out to your big night out, that kind of stuff as well. So.
Yeah. And the latest thing I've seen, because we're sat in a room full of 2 tons of the stuff.
Do you want to tell them what it is?
A few boxes of the Epic Table olive oil. So we've got a really good extra virgin olive oil now.
How on earth did you get around to that? I mean, that's brilliant.
I think it's funny because we cook a lot.
Yeah.
And I always reach for olive oil. Uh-huh. It's the first thing I touch.
Yeah.
And I think if I looked at one, you know, thing that I would relate to, I feel like it's Italian. Yeah. I'm spiritually Italian. Yeah. I drizzle on everything. It's good fats. Yeah. It's super good for you, but also tastes absolutely so amazing. Yeah. So I just wanted to bring out this olive oil that I wanted to have an impact. Uh-huh. So I work with a company called City Harvest, which is an organization in New York City who do 2 things that I'm super passionate about. They help those in need by feeding them, but also they prevent food wastage by taking from restaurants, food purveyors and supermarkets and providing them to those in need. So for every bottle that we sell, there's 11 people we provide
every bottle.
For. Yeah, every bottle.
Wow, that's incredible.
So it's really cool, man. Really cool.
But like you said, it's like the first thing you touch. I love that sentiment because I'm just thinking about now, like whenever I start a meal, you're right. I always go for olive oil.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always get asked, what's the healthiest oil? It's like, okay, well, it's a very hard question to answer because you really want to relate it to what you're cooking. But in the majority of times, it's olive oil for me.
Absolutely.
And that cold pressed, vitamin E rich, polyphenol rich oil is just so delicious and health promoting. I can imagine why it's the one that you reach for.
Absolutely, man. It's a nice, like, you know, olive green looking goodness to it. It also really reminds me of my childhood a lot.
Yeah.
So I guess this is completely not a thing for me, but it's like if there was one thing that I want to put out there that people would relate to, it would be a product like this.
Yeah,
so cold press from California as well, right?
Yeah. So cold press from California, and on the bottle you have a little QR tag, so you get, you know, 10 recipes of how to, you know, love video it. Shot down here. We'll get Rupi on there one day, get a little special.
Yeah, when I come back.
Special.
Definitely, man.
Dude, it's been a pleasure. I can't wait to see your new book, to see how many of these bottles here you shift, and all doing good stuff as well. And I'm definitely going to be coming back to Charlie Street. I came before and I had a meal here with my baby sister, and we absolutely loved it. And we're definitely going to be coming back again, mate.
Mate, pleasure's all mine. It's always cool. It's actually good to freaking finally meet you.
Yeah, I know, right?
we're saying to all your amazing listeners, man. We've chatted for a long time on socials, and it feels like we've known each other for so long.
Totally,
it's good finally.
Yeah. I'll have to get you on my pod, on my studio when we're back in London.
Epic, mate. We'll make it happen. Yeah.
Sick.
Cheers, dude.
Awesome.
I
I really hope you enjoyed that podcast with Dan. If you're visiting New York City, definitely check out the restaurant Charlie Street. It's quite literally incredible. Proper amazing coffee, and the vibe is brilliant as well. And whilst you're in the States, of course, don't forget to order a copy of the new book Eat to Beat Illness, which is now all over America. You can find this information and more at thedoctorskitchen.com. Make sure you check out danchurchill.com. You can see some of his amazing works, including his YouTube and Instagram accounts. All the links to those are going to be in the show notes at thedoctorskitchen.com. Subscribe to the newsletter for weekly recipes, content, and much more to help you live the healthiest, happiest life. And if you like this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating. It really does help spread the love and the message. Until next time, guys.